Hi, I'm Dr. Demento, and you are listening to KBOO Portland.
Welcome to the Talking Earth. Patrick Bucardi just came from work in the rain, and did you get drenched?
No, it's not coming down that bad. It just sounds worse than it is. It's cold out, though.
Well, I want to really focus a lot on Kenneth Patchen, but there are other things. The problem is these programs go really fast, but this one will air this Talking Earth occurs
January 10th,
and that
is January 10th,
and that'll be next Monday, I guess. So,
which is now.
Well, and we're gonna do a little chit chat. We'll just put on Sarah Vaughan. There's a long story with this. I tried to get rid of this record here. I want voices. And this is the early 1957, and she's scat singing. I don't like this record, but I like this cut.
Sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm blue. My disposition, baby, just depends on you. I never mind.
Sometimes I'm happy.
In the sky, as long as day is sunny night. Sometimes I hate you, but when I hate you, baby, it's because I love you, darling. What can I do? I'm happy when I'm with you. Even if you're great, it
Well, that's scat singing. I kept leaving this record, double record, at the bus stop. This is right when she began, but I think it's too busy.
So you kept leaving it at the bus stop?
Yeah, so people take it away.
And nobody took it away?
They didn't take it away.
Okay, because I was just thinking, like, I had an album that I kept getting destroyed by accident. Like, I would leave it in my car and it'd melt.
You're responding.
Metallica, Ride the Lightning. I just had no luck with it.
Well,
the tape would break.
Well,
twice it melted in my car because I was a fool.
What's been happening? The pandemic, or whatever we're calling this stuff, has brought a lot of us inward, and I've been reading more and more books, and I might even mention some of them here in a minute, but. And then I'm finding a lot of CDs. So, and then you can see the size of my room, and so I'm kicking everything around, and it's driving me nuts because I lose something. So, what I think we might do is January traditionally was. The William Stafford birthday celebration, and Paul Ann Peterson did a lot of that work, and then she became a two-time poet laureate in Oregon. And so why don't we just, the great Stafford said, in every war there are always two losers, and he was a CEO, but you need to know about William Stafford. Part of this program is going to be going back into the past and voices. So let's pick up his voice here. The heck with it, we'll pick him up.
The way it is, there's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you're pursuing. you have to explain about the thread. But it is hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen, people get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread. I thought of coming up here and making a bow when Henry talked about my humility. I haven't told this before. By our house on the plains, before I was born, my father planted a maple. At night, after bedtime, when others were asleep, I would go out and stand beside it and know all the way north and all the way south. Air from fields wandered in. Stars waited with me. All of us ached with a silence, needing the next thing, but quiet. We leaned into midnight and then leaned back. On the rise to the west, the radio tower blinked, so many messages pouring by. A great surge came rushing from everywhere and wrapped all the land and sky. Where were we going? How soon would our house break loose and become a little speck lost in the vast night? My father and mother would die. The maple tree would stand right there. With my hand on that smooth bark, we would watch it all. Then my feet would come loose from earth and rise by the power of longing. I wouldn't let the others know about this, but I would be everywhere, as I am right now, a thin tone like the wind, a sip of blue light, no source, no end, no horizon.
That was his last reading. He died, I believe, in 94. This is the last reading. The Friends of William Stafford brought this out. Tim Barnes is doing great work, and you should look for the William Stafford, Friends of William Stafford newsletter. This is from August 13th, 1993. I told you that this would be a little bit of a retro thing, but Paul Ann Peterson, who really worked hard as a Oregon Poet Laureate, and she had two terms, and then Kim Stafford, his son, actually became later, after he got out under the shadow of his father, he became the a Poet Laureate. And so there's, who do you miss on the Portland scene? We're done, Oregon scene. Who do you miss?
Who do I miss that's passed
Yeah, any
on?
Of the poets. I mean, you've been around a lot of them.
Dooley?
Oh, John Dooley, okay. We just mention their names. We don't have to make a big... We don't have to talk about them, but just... Who do you miss? I mean, and you were around the scene a lot. Yeah, John was quite the character, but...
He was. I did a reading with him that was... I mean, it wasn't very well attended, that Sophia and Amanda put together.
Okay.
It was like a bad poetry reading, but the thing is there was... It was... Very fun.
Not we got to keep moving. Now we're going.
It was very fun, but it's.
He was quite the. He was quite the character.
He was very witty.
Very fine, and so.
I'm trying to think.
That was just a point, and how long have you been around the scene? I know you've been on Long Island and other.
I moved here in late 92.
Patrick, we're gonna do. So, Kenneth Patchen in a while, but what did you bring and what do you want to share? But we need to mention though that Barbara LaMorticella will be in February when?
Third Monday in February she's going to have her next show.
Third Monday in February, okay. And we don't have a date on that. And
Dan's show is next Monday.
Dan Radfield's show on KBOO 90.7.
He sent something out on Facebook, and I did not write down the poets, so that is on me. But he has a show next Monday.
Well, we're not worried about that. He was very selfless at one point, and he had a magazine called NRG. This is a learning, kids, this is a professor talking here, a street professor. He did 26 books, and he had his own magazine, NRG, and he's sort of a surrealist poet, but he's bringing other poets on now. That's what the mission of the, position of the Talking Earth has been for almost 50 years. Please support KABU. And they had they claimed a successful pledge drive. I guess they did. It just ended December 31st. Now, you're going to share this fellow here. Well, give us some of the hard stuff. Go ahead. You talk.
This is from Frank Bidart's most recent book, Against Silence. He is one.
What year,
Award,
though? What do you mean recent?
Came out in 21.
Well, he's still alive.
2021. He's still alive. He's still going.
Okay. Well, keep going.
I was going to read this one poem, Coda.
Patrick Bocard, my engineer, KABU.
And this is Frank Bidart. Neither master nor slave. When this body that we find ourselves in at birth at last dies, and what we have hoped at best, is past death to rejoin the vast silence that precedes birth. You see the hand before you that you think is your hand, and there by your decision is a chimera you cast on a smooth, crowded, impenetrable mirror wall that you face. Chimera cast by the immense bright light behind you that you cannot turn your head to see. When this body begins to wear out, die like anything else that blossoms, withers, and dies. All our lives, we have heard and reheard words of con men and tortured visionaries prophesizing what must happen when the body that you find yourself in at birth, the gnarled old hand that one day you look down and see, one day you see is yours. Two. Mind at war with its ground. Think of the earth, matter, the mind's ground, as an enormous mirror across whose impenetrable surface the individual soul fears that it merely appears and disappears without weight. Another among multitudinous chimera without identity or consequence. Dispensable, without identity or force, erased among numberless infinities. One finger reached out toward the wall across whose surface you are, a chimera, and with its one knife-like nail, deep as you could, dug into it. Almost in delirium, you scratched the screen with a jagged scratch. Before it happened, it was never going to happen. After it happened, it was always going to happen. Not the deepest scratch. In triumph, you are almost indifferent to how deep, but deep. Mind returns the intolerable in art as brilliant dream.
Well, Patrick, I didn't know you were so metaphysical. And
he's very metaphysical, but sometimes he... One of his more famous poems is The War of Vaslav Nijinsky, which is about Nijinsky dancing the Rite of Spring. So it's from the point of view of Nijinsky.
And you say he came from where? He came from...
Bakersfield, California. Very conservative area.
He was gay, you said.
He's gay. He's definitely out. And he's older.
He must be older now, isn't
he? He's had a long career. And actually, I read his earlier work. And I've always been kind of more into his earlier work. But I like this new book of his. A lot.
What's the name of it? Give the title.
Against Silence. It has.
And we spell his name
Bidart.
Okay, Bidart.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know him, and that's what.
He's very well worth reading. He beat out Layli Long Soldier for I think it was the.
Well,
National
I don't
War
know all these
ago.
Names. So who's Layli Long Soldier?
She is a young, much younger poet, Native American poet. Her book is really good, and the name escapes me, unfortunately. And it's also kind of.
Well, that's all right. I mean,
both her and Beidart use the page. They're kind of all over the page.
You say there's a lot of white space.
There's a lot of white space. There's a lot of different stuff that they do. Like, what a Lely Long Soldiers. It may not be a poem. Maybe part of a poem. The words go in different directions. So you have to turn the page to read all of it.
Well, that's a little bit like E.E. Cummings' work.
Yes, there's definitely some influence
of
that.
You kind of have to...
And Apollinaire as well,
yeah,
probably.
It's really interesting. So, no, you have a science fiction taste in poetry, and I jibed you about that, but it's cool. Well, listen, this is the thing. Last month, we had about 10 minutes of this tape on Kesey, and I'm not going to... I want this to be sort of a learning thing. I'm not going to do that, but when I spoke for an hour with Barbara Lamorticello, my co-host, and for many years, and she's going to be back on the 3rd, 10 p.m. in Third Talking Earth in February. But Barbara said there was a great PBS program. Documentary, and I had dealt with some of that, and so I think if you probably went on OPB, PBS online, they're doing better work now. They're getting a little more, what's the word? A little more free expressive, you know, maybe the pandemic, who knows? I don't know what it is. But she said it was damn good. She got trapped up on Skyline Road, you know, where she and Robert lived, and so she was, it was all snowy up there and very slippery. She was trapped at Paula's house, her daughter's house, for 10 days.
Wow.
And couldn't get back up there. But she's back in the place. And Barbara, we call out our love to you. And I'm glad you brought up that PBS, which will, I'm only going to do 3 minutes of this. But I sometimes a great notion and come on, help me with the
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
I mean, one flew over the cuckoo's nest, and Kesey needs to be known better. And get a pencil and jot a few things down. I'm not going to go on very long with this, but the magic trip was the bus tapes that Kesey could never sync up with the old bus, which is sinking in the swamp on his property, and they have a new bus. And so this is from a great... He was a lot of fun, and this, he was in his heyday here. He had written Sailor Song, The Sea Lion, and I think we'll just do a few minutes of this, but I go to the OPB and pick up the Ken Kesey documentary, and you also need this little CLA documentarian tape, The Magic Trip. Just, you got to know Kesey better, particularly when he was younger. So here... Let's just catch his voice here.
We've got to confront the audience with their form. I've had this argument with one of the arguments that I have frequently with Allen Ginsberg. He gets on people's case, and I say, Allen, it's always the poet's fault. It's the job of the poet to deliver the vision. It's not going to come from the teacher in metal shop. It's not going to come from the politicians. It's the job of the poet to communicate the vision out to the people, and to use whatever means possible to produce tricks, to make fire, to when you see somebody using their craft to deliver that kind of message, you don't really notice it. Another good example is Joan Baez. Everything about Joan Baez has been good. You listen to her voice, it's like a signature at the bottom of a good check. All the work that she's done for 20 years has been really solid, good, hard work for the benefit of everybody that she can imagine. And that is her using that voice of hers to communicate and to touch people. The novel is a very recent device compared to, you know, thousands of years. This is something that has come about because of Gutenberg, but I think we're going to get back to storytelling where you actually have to get up and perform your piece, do your piece in front of people. That's when it comes alive. Otherwise, it just lies there like dead ants on a page.
You talked earlier about farming, dairying as being...
We're going to stop that. I like OPB PBS doing a documentary. I recommend The Magic Trip. And I think it was the 1964 bus when he was doing the acid test and he got into trouble, and Tom Wolfe wrote, about what was it called, the acid test?
The electric Kool-Aid acid test.
The electric Kool-Aid acid test. So I just want this to be voices and... My God, the books I found at the, I'm calling it Will Good, Goodwill bins, they just throw this stuff out, you know, and it's broken. And but I think, Patrick, let's do a little chit-chat here, and then we're going to start the Kenneth Patchen Wonderful Folkways record, and we're going to divide it up. But is there anything burning in your gut? Do you want to read another poem? Go ahead.
Yeah, I have one of my own.
Well, then do it. Let's read it.
I went through my old notebook and I found this today. Maybe it's good, maybe it's not. It's kind of about snow. Real snow beast. White covered, limbs like Douglas firs, hidden in northwest forests. Snow accumulating like sand. White sand beach, sky buzzing. White furrowed, furred tarantula that is the forest now.
Well, you know, were you a little incapacitated by that cold weather or what?
Oh, yes. I was not able to have the kind of Christmas I was hoping for. I was supposed to... go to the coast and visit my family, and I stayed home with my cats and my wife, which was very good.
We send our love out to you, Melissa, dear,
and to Leo and Skook, who seem to be doing well today.
Well, you do know the wonderful as British and as stiff as T.S. Eliot was, the old boss. Old Possum's Book of Curious Cats.
Yes.
And that became the Broadway play Cats.
Which became the worst movie of all time.
Oh, well, let's not bring up the bad.
No, we don't want to mention that or ever watch it ever again.
Well, we're going to clip right along here. Well, I think we'll get into Kenneth Patchen, but you said you didn't know him that well. We're already...
I've read some of his stuff, but it's been a while. I would like to hear some Kenneth Patchen. That would be great.
No, this is a great folkways. It was done in Canada, and KBOO had a copy of it in the back room. I guess they will, but I'm going to key it up here. Well...
Yes.
So it was... Kenneth Patchen reads with jazz in Canada and with the Alan Neal Quartet. And, I have a story about that his wife told me, Miriam Patchen. And do you know the picture books? The books you want from Patchen are The Journal of Albion Moonlight and Sleepers Awake. And in the Palo Alto hospital, they dropped him on his back, and they would not admit their, and he ended up bedridden the rest of his life, and he did the, all those picture poems from the bed, a little bit like Woody Guthrie with his Huntington's Chorea. He ended up bedridden. So
yeah.
I think the record will speak for itself, but what's kind of interesting about it is Poetry and Jazz Live featuring Kenneth Patchen. This was done in as for my own notion of poetry reading with jazz, it's something I've been kicking around ever since I heard tapes brought out here in the summer of 1956. So that's A.S. Neal talking about they're doing this great record. And so what I want you to know is there were two records in the KABU, Support KABU in their archive there, and then I finally got my own record of Kenneth, and so I think and you why don't you know him or what
I haven't read that much of him. I read a little bit. I think it's been I can't remember him though.
Well, the big deal is his connection with Charlie Parker, and so this record is done in 1959, and so I think we're gonna do a thing here, and we have to watch the time, of course. Kenneth Patchen, and I'm sorry that happened in the hospital, and there are a number of his poetry picture books. I can't think of their names, but he was right on the scene there at the beginning of the scene. And this, I think that we're gonna do it this way, all the technology in my room. Let's see, I'll go back a second.
Long time.
I'm dividing the record up a little bit too.
This is Kenneth Patchen, the jazz band is the Al Neal Quartet, Al Neal on piano, Lionel Chambers bass, Bill Boyle on drums, Dale Hillary alto sax.
That's the jazz group ASU.
Continue with four poems as songs.
Four poems as songs. Just enjoy here. Enjoy.
Everlasting contenders of the beast and angel, creatures of the earth, it is good. Any who prays not grandly, oh, but they should. Death waits for everything that lives. Grim beast of the wood, who prays not grandly, oh, but they should. The heart weeps for all things here, but is comforted. For hard is the angel of all, who prays not grandly, but wish they could. Do I not deal with angels when her lips I touch? So gentle, so warm and sweet. Falsity has no sight of her. Oh, the world is a place of veils and roses when she is there. I am come to her wonder as a boy finding a star in a haymow. And there is nothing cruel or mad or evil anywhere in the world. The sea is awash with roses. Oh, they blow upon the land. The still hills fill with their scent. Oh, the hills flow on their sweetness as on God's hand. Oh, love, it is so little we know pleasure. Pleasure that lasts as the snow. But the sea is awash with roses. Oh, they blow upon the land. Not many kingdoms left. I write the lips of the moon upon her shoulders in a temple of silvery faraway-ness. I guard her to rest. For her bed I write a stillness over all the swans of the world. With the morning breath of the snow leopard, I cover her against any hurt. And using the pen of rivers and mountaintops, I store her pillow with singing. Upon her hair, I write the looking of the heavens at early morning. Away from this kingdom, from this last undefiled place, I would keep our governments, our civilization, and all other spirit-forsaken and corrupt institutions. Oh, cold, beautiful blossoms of the moon moving across her shoulders. The lips of the moon moving there where any other lips would be a profanation.
A profanation. Now, I want to... Well, give me a little response here, and I want to break up this record. I mean, we're gonna go right back to it because we have to watch our time. But
yeah,
what you had never heard his voice? I mean, this is a voice program.
I have not heard his voice. I don't think I have.
Yeah, and but you know a little bit about the jazz poetry scene. You know, it took off. You know,
yeah,
and a lot of people have.
The last line is really amazing, that the moon's lips, any other lips would be a profanation, but the moon's lips aren't.
Well.
unlike your governments and all the other corrupt institutions on Earth.
Let's ad lib a little here before we go back to some of this. And you know, this record was made in 1959, and wow. But you know, what's happening now is so twisted, so to speak, you know, twisted. I mean, I really feel that we're not gonna talk about Omicron, or however you said. The Oregonians said just today that they're not going to do anything to stop it. It's going to surge here, and they feel that it's a lighter, it's more contagious, but it's a lighter.
They're not going to do anything to stop it. Is that what they?
Yeah, they're not. They're you know that we're going to have to come up with other strategies with these crazy microbial bacteria that are going to assail
us. It's a virus. It's not it may be microbial, but it's not a bacteria.
Well, no, it's a virus. You're right. I stand corrected. It is a virus.
It's undead.
And actually, I have a crazy. You know, the National Geographic mysteries of a virus. They kill us by the millions, but without them, life is impossible. This is an amazing article. This was February of 2021, and I'm not gonna wade into that, but they've been omnipresent, and they actually give us life. You can National Geographic mysteries of a virus. They kill us by the millions. I have page 40 is this amazing article about this, and it has corpses. They even dug up the Spanish flu in the permafrost of Alaska from someone who had died. You know, I mean, this stuff is going to happen, but you know, any quick response. Now we're gonna show you that Patchen is funkier a lot.
Let's hear Patchen, but I was gonna say we probably.
No, you talk.
It's probably a good idea not to get Omicron, even if it's weaker. Probably not a good idea to go out.
Well,
of your
you
way
respond.
To get it.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, it's cool.
I'm still wearing masks.
I'm going to the funk zone here. Here we go. We're gonna get him. He's funkier.
Joking.
Right. Stir down through the silvery ash that begins to collect on the forest floor. It is the hour when the day seems to die in our arms. When the day seems to die in our arms. And we have not done much that was beautiful. No, we have not done much that was beautiful. The lonesome boy blue. Nobody's a long time. Nowhere's a big pocket to put little pieces of nice things that have never really happened to anyone except those people who were lucky enough not to get born. Oh, lonesome's a bad place to get crowded into with only yourself riding back and forth on a blind white horse along an empty road meeting all your pals face to face. Oh, nobody's a long. What are you
They had a lot of energy there, you know. The beats and the jazz came together, you know.
But he's talking about all the horrible things about driving around instead of the beats are all about how awesome it is to drive around. He's talking about getting stuck in rush hour and not seeing your friends.
Oh, you're a funny guy.
I kind of like Patchen better than Kerouac at this point.
Now, this is a very important voice, and it's a Folkways record, and we're going to do a little more of it. But what blew me away is that Charlie Parker loved his poems, and they hung out together in that period. And I thought I would do a quick Charlie...
playing some Charlie Parker?
Yeah. Yeah, let's go. Do it. Come on. No, I'm doing this again and I'm not gonna. Oh, come on. We're gonna do Charlie Parker here, whether I die. Fine, let's do it. Just a taste of it. Yeah, that they were that close is intriguing to me. Let's talk about it, but I mean, what is interesting, back then, there weren't MFA poetry programs, there wasn't a National Endowment for the Arts to give us mediocre poets, et cetera, so, and we're going to go back to him, but what do you tell me, what was your itching to say there?
It's not super interesting, but I was just going to say that, I put on Charlie Parker for my cats and my big Siamese cat.
Oh, holy moly, cats, okay.
Yeah, my big Siamese cat freaked out and he started me howling. And howling is while we were playing it. And I only recently realized it's because I kept saying, like, I kept telling Leo, like, yeah, it's Bird. It's Bird. And he, like, freaked
bird
out.
Bird Parker.
he thought it was an actual bird.
Oh my gosh! Wow, that was a good ad lib there. That was very well done.
No, it's not an ad lib. It actually happened.
They just won't let you in, child. So little sweet day in the morning, ask an old man in a beat up hat who looked all broke like in the middle from doing right by the bonk for maybe 20, 30 years. How come that gun-colored fellow won't let me in that hippodrome? The little girl explained, you see, I want to watch all those big white horses prancing round for that beautiful gold-haired lady like it shows them on the sign out front. But the old man with a beat-up life is in much too big a hurry to bother answering her. For you see, like a lot of people these days, he's on his way to the nearest saloon where he can maybe watch some big but certainly not so white horses of his own. And maybe lean down from the back of one of them and maybe spit right in the boss's eye, if you know what I mean. A sigh is little altered beside the slow oak, as the rustling fingers of the sun stir down through the silvery ash that begins to collect on the forest floor. It is the hour when the day seems to die in our arms. When the day seems to die in our arms, and we have not done much that was beautiful. No, we have not done much that was beautiful. The lonesome boy blue, oh, nobody's a long time. Nowhere's a big pocket to put little pieces of nice things that have never really happened to anyone, except those people who were lucky enough not to get born. Oh, lonesome's a bad place to get crowded into.
We only have 10 minutes or so. Darn, this thing goes fast. But what I want to do here anyway, I want to keep the voice thing going. And I'm going to, this is Langston Hughes. And
cool.
So let's do it.
Applied to race. The first poem is called Afro-American Fragment. So long, so far away is Africa. Not even memories alive, save those that history books create, save those that songs beat back into the blood, beat out of blood with words sad sung in strange un-Negro tongue. So long, so far away is Africa. Subdued and time lost are the drums, and yet through some vast mist of race there comes this song I do not understand, this song of atavistic land, of bitter yearnings lost without a place. So long, so far away is Africa's dark face. This is The Negro Speaks of Rivers.
No, this is a very important poem.
One of my earliest poems, written in 1920, just after I came out of high school. The way this poem came to be written was that I was going to Mexico to visit my father, who lived in Mexico City, and on the train going across the Mississippi River, just outside St. Louis, I looked out the window and I saw this great muddy river flowing down toward the heart of the South, and I began to think about what this river meant to the Negro people, how, in a sense, our history was linked to this river, how in slavery time, my grandmother told me that to be sold down the Mississippi was one of the worst things that could happen to a Negro slave. And then I remembered that I'd read about Abraham Lincoln going down the Mississippi as a young man. And he went on a raft to New Orleans and he saw human beings bought and sold in the slave market there. And he was so horrified by this that he never forgot it. And many years later, of course, we know that it was Lincoln who signed the Emancipation Proclamation. And so, as the train went on into the gathering dusk, because it had been about sunset when we crossed the river, I took my father's letter out of my pocket and began to write out on the back of his letter this poem, The Negro Speaks of Rivers. I've known rivers. I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood in human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut near the Congo and it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans, and I've seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers. ancient, dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. This one is a poem almost as old as The Negro Speaks of Rivers. It was written when I was perhaps 21. It's called Negro. I'm a Negro, black as the night is black, black like the depths of my Africa. I've been a slave. Caesar told me to keep his doorsteps clean. I brushed the boots of Washington. I've been a worker. Under my hand, the pyramids arose. I made mortar for the Woolworth building. I've been a singer. All the way from Africa to Georgia, I carried my sorrow songs. I made ragtime. I've been a victim. The Belgians cut off my hands in the Congo. They lynch me now in Mississippi. I am a Negro, black as the night is black, black like the depths of my Africa. American Heartbreak. I am the American heartbreak, rock on which freedom stumps its toe, the great mistake that Jamestown made long ago. Dream Variations. This poem, like the first one that I read, has overtones of Africa. To fling my arms wide in some place of the sun, to whirl and to dance till the white day is done, then rest at cool evening beneath a tall tree, while night comes on gently, dark like me. That is my dream. To fling my arms wide in the face of the sun, dance, whirl, whirl, till the quick day is done. Rest at pale evening, a tall, slim tree. Night coming tenderly, black like me.
Black like me. Now, let's keep, we're running out of time, but I want to put Billie Holiday on here, or we're going to go out with the Patchen. So what is this thing got any movement to it, or are we doing all right?
Yeah.
Well, let's white supremacy, you know, the white nationalists, these people are still out there in the world, and
yes,
and we excoriate them, and they are simply trouble, and there is this thread of white nationalism, of white superiority in the world, and I'm so glad for Black Lives Matter, and it's about time the exposure of four centuries of slavery and all the wealth that was created by African American people and we whiteys, I'm one of them, I'm au fait. We've got to really deal with this in a personal manner. You know, it's not going away. The race issue is far from over. I call it a cultural issue, but it ain't going away. So we have a responsibility, and this is not a lecture. We want to go out here with either Billy or...
let's go with Billie Holiday.
Yeah, we want a woman's voice here. So the Talking Earth has women's voices. This air. I hope you newer generation realize all of the struggles that have gone on before, and we're on your side. We're with you, okay? Take care of KBOO.FM, and we'll air this December 10th. And as I cue this up, you have any last words here? Barbara Lamorticello, go ahead.
Barbara Lamorticello will be
hosting.
And
I'm going to put on Billy up.
Third Monday of February. And next week, Dan Raphael will be hosting Talking Earth. And we're going to be hearing Billie Holiday in just a minute.
I hope to God this thing will work. I hate the song Strange Fruit, but am I going to play that? ¶¶ Oh, we'll just play a little billiard. I'll get it.
Yeah.
But it's, she used to throw up when she just read the poem. It's about lynching in the South.
Yes.
One of those bells that now and then rings. Just one of those things.
I love Billy.
It was just one of those nights.
I'm gonna sample it here.
Just one of those fabulous flights.
Yeah, we're gonna do the Lynch thing, I guess. It's a heavy one.
Day in.
Or should we?
Day
not?
Out.
No, let's do this. Let's stay with this.
The same old hoodoo follows me about.
Yeah, it's not
the same
story.
Old pounding in my
it's
heart.
Always great.
Whenever I
well, we
think
need some
grooves. And darling, I think of you day in and day out. Day out. Day in. I needn't tell you how my days begin. When I awaken with a tingle, one possibility in view, that possibility of maybe seeing you.
Come
rain.
KBO Portland.
I want a last remark. You're going to get it?
I meet you and to me.
African-American people. Slaves gave us the blues, the only original, and probably jazz too. You need to know that we owe the people a lot, and I still want to turn. I'm going to. We'll end now. Here. Strange Fruit, one of the scariest lynching songs I've ever heard. And Billie Holiday used to throw up. I'm only going to do part of it. We're going to get out of here with the talking earth.
Southern trees bear a strange fruit. Blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pastoral scene of the gallant South, the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, sweet and then the sudden smell of burning flesh.
I don't want a bummer. We've heard Billie Holiday. We've heard Langston Hughes, Kenneth Patchen. And what else did we do here? I don't know. The Talking Earth. It'll air. I hope this makes sense. You can give some feedback to KBOO. Go ahead. Just override what did we do? We did Kenneth Patchen. We did
read some poetry.
Patrick.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Okay. Thank you.
has a mobile app. You can listen to all your favorite shows, subscribe to KBOO Podcast, even set KBOO as your alarm clock. Just look for KBOO on the iTunes and Google Play Store. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review.
K.
B.
O.
O.